Would there?
Doc reached over and picked up the object, hefting the heavy ceramic bookend in both hands.
Not if you were taken by surprise, no.
Two things before lights out, Doc.
Yes?
Take my tunic and pull up the hood like I was wearing it before, and you might make it past the security cameras in this sector. Once you're past the cell block, they won't be looking for you immediately, and you can move a bit more freely.
Very well. What is the other thing you wish to relate to me?
When you raise that bookend up and clobber my noggin, try not to kill me.
Dressed in the security bodysuit with the hood pulled up over his head, Doc hoped Alan was right in assuming he would escape detection from the security video cameras scanning the hallways of the redoubt. He had quickly memorized by rote the numbers to push for entry into the control room of the Kronos Matrans device, and was hoping against hope the Kron Jump transport was still using the same command codes. As he already knew from his previous freer days, a skeleton crew would be on duty inside the control room. Looking inside through an observation portal, he spied three figures, two men and a woman. Doc hovered outside the access door for a moment, his fingers poised to tap in the entry code, and then he decided to wait. He nimbly stepped into the nearby men's room and went into a stall and sat. He knew the shift break would come soon, and if he were quick, he could go inside with the advantage of having only a single technician watching over the dormant equipment. Time trawling tests were rarely done after daylight, and those on watch inside were only there to run computer simulations, more or less. Doc checked his wristwatch, also liberated from Alan. He'd made note of the patterns of the curious lair he was kept within, and found all of those who shared his world in the redoubts to be almost painfully predictable in a military sort of way. If, at a designated time, tab A were to be inserted within slot B, nothing short of World War III could prevent such an order from being carried through. Reciting bits of poetry and famous monologues from the theater in his mind to pass the time, Doc was rewarded when his 10-minute wait passed quickly. He stepped out of the washroom and peeked back through the small window into the Matran's control room. Only a single figure now remained, the other two having retired for coffee and conversation in the commissary two levels up. They'd be gone for 15 minutes. 15 minutes. An eternity, if one knew how to use the time well. Doc looked up at the warning sign posted above the doorway. In red and black letters on a laminated yellow backing, the sign read, "Entry is absolutely forbidden to all but B-12 cleared personnel or higher." The word forbidden was underlined for added emphasis.
I'd say I've regained my former rank and clearance.
He counted on the masters of the redoubt to not have changed the locking codes for the heavy vanadium steel door. Taking a deep breath and mentally crossing his fingers, Doc punched in the trio of digits for the entry code, tapping first the number 3, followed by 5, and then 2. He was rewarded by the door sliding upwards silently into a ceiling slot, allowing his entrance. Turning, he reversed the code, and the door slid down and locked into a floor groove, sealing the control room from the rest of the complex. The man on duty turned from a flickering computer screen. He was slight of build and very short, coming in at a height of 5 feet. He wore wire-rimmed glasses that accented his tanned skin and Asian features. Doc had hoped he wouldn't encounter anyone he knew, but as their eyes met, he knew his luck had finally run its course.
Good evening, Dr. Tanner. Can I help you?
Dawn arrived with the fabulous, multicolored beauty of the Caribbean sky. Before beginning the day, Ryan decided to pay Dr. Silas Jamivu a quick visit. In the doctor's bedroom, he discovered his host was doing a most curious thing, and since it was an action Ryan had never associated with a male member of the species, it made the sight even more unsettling. Once he identified it, the feminine undertones made him wonder about their host. Jamivu was carefully, studiously, meticulously filing his fingernails with a small brown nail file, vigorously rubbing it back and forth in a sawing motion, pausing every 30 seconds or so to look at the back of his hand to make sure the manicure was proceeding as planned. The doctor was nattily dressed in a similar manner as the day before, now wearing a black and gray patterned blazer with a new burgundy dress shirt and narrow black necktie with matching black slacks. The long white lab coat was draped over the back of a nearby chair. Good morning, Ryan Connor.
Morning. Thought I might take my boy and look around the island some today.
What a delightful idea. I only wish I could spare the time to come along. Your good Dr. Tanner will be assisting me today with my continuing attempts to use the matter transfer unit for something besides a glorified ferry boat.
What's the situation outside the fortress walls?
Well, the western side of Puerto Rico suffered terrific losses, and from what I understand is nigh uninhabitable, unless one enjoys squalor and disease.
Rad sickness, I'll bet. Must have been a nuke.
He'd noticed upon their arrival in El Morro that the tiny rad counter on its long coat hadn't indicated dangerous levels of radiation, but that didn't mean other parts of Puerto Rico hadn't suffered from the same radioactive fire that had plagued the rest of the planet. Pausing to blow on the nails of his left hand, Jamevu responded in the negative.
No, Ryan. No nukes. At least no major direct hits. The island's trials have been generated thanks to the Queen of Havoc herself, Mother Nature. Hurricane season used to run here all summer and fall. Storms would develop out in the Atlantic, then wind their way northwestward, sometimes striking Puerto Rico, but as a rule, the island was spared. After the new cost, the storms seemed to increase in ferocity and regularity, and Puerto Rico was no longer so lucky. I have suffered through two powerful storms myself, but none as deadly as the one that hit the western side.
So, any dangers I should know about outside?
In Old San Juan? Not hardly.
Fair enough. Thanks for the advice.
Exiting the expansive grounds of El Morro by way of the short stone bridge stretching across the moat around the fortress, Dean, Christie, and Ryan went out after his talk with Jamevu to look at the sights. In reality, Ryan needed to assess their surroundings, be prepared and familiar enough to move through the area without hesitation if need be. Besides granting his hearty approval, their host had also suggested they leave as early as possible to avoid the heat of the afternoon. Outside El Morro, the first thing they encountered was the ruin of the Santo Domingo convent as they stepped out onto Cristo Street. Even in its dilapidated condition, Old San Juan was magnificent, rich in the coin of history. The night before, Jamevu had commented that this part of Puerto Rico was essentially his own private lair. The old part of the city had originally been separated from the mainland by three bridges, and in addition, the buildings of the inlet were walled off, surrounded by high, imposing towers, thanks to the old fort nearby, known as Castillo de San Cristobal. Before leaving El Morro, Dean had taken a printed leaflet from a wire rack in the foyer of the fortress, next to what was once a combination information desk and souvenir stand. The pamphlet had obviously been designed for the edification of visitors, and the boy had delighted in reading from the tri-folded sheet of glossy paper as the three of them walked along the narrow sidewalk. Dean pointed to a little building at the end of Cristo Street.
See that chapel, Dad?
Ryan took in the decrepit church, noting the cross jutting from the roof was the only part of the construct still completely intact.
Sure.
They built it because a slowy retard was racing his horse and couldn't stop before hitting the wall. The retard's mom and dad wanted to help prevent more racing accidents from happening to other stoops.
Keep it up, son, and you'll be giving Doc a run for his windpipe. You're telling me a lot more than I want or need to know.
Christie gave Dean a quick hug as they walked.
Well, I appreciate it. Somebody has to play tour guide.
Place feels like the walls are closing in. Lots of places for an ambush.
Says here the streets and sidewalks are so narrow that pedestrians must often walk single file. What's a pedestrian, Dad?
Beats me. Means people, I guess. We'll have to ask Doc when we get back.
Christie's attention was on the street beneath their feet. The roadway was made up of a series of rectangular bricks of a dark blue substance.
Feels kind of strange here, walking down paths thousands of years old. Not a bad feeling, just strange.
Old ghosts?
Christie nodded and gave him a dazzling smile.
Maybe so, lover.
Some of the streets in Old San Juan are still paved with the original blue-glazed blocks brought over on old Spanish sailing ships. Hey,
Ryan
on.
Quickly plucked the booklet from the boy's hands and shoved it into the back pocket of his trousers.
Need to get your nose out of that pamphlet and look at what's around you, Dean. You're missing half the sights by reading about them.
The morning air wafting through the streets of Old San Juan was pleasant, and Christie was glad for the opportunity to lose the extra layers of clothing she and everyone else had grown accustomed to wearing at all times. It was much easier to wear a jacket than to tote it. Not having it on your person could also mean forgetting the item of clothing and leaving it behind if trouble started. However, here in Old San Juan, things appeared to be much more relaxed. A few of the locals gazed at the three, but didn't